This recording is a production of Faith Builders Educational Programs. This presentation was recorded at Teachers Week 2017, held at Faith Builders on August 1 through 4.
Thank you for coming again this morning, and thank you for Brother Joshua for a glimpse, another look there at faith. And faith cometh by hearing, and hearing by the word of the Lord. We're gathered here this morning again to discuss authority. And yesterday morning, we were working on the foundation and basis for authority. And the big question on the floor there, or the one that I tried to present to you, who says so, is a question facing our generation. And will increasingly face us, even in our conservative Mennonite circles. It's just the way the osmosis in culture works. So let's not be fooled and feel like we are safe behind the fortress of conservatism. I doubt it. And we saw that ultimately that question is answered in the sovereignty of God. It's the right answer. But I did try to help us to think about a couple of things there. Before I go to that, notice here that today it's developing personal authority. And what I had suggested to you yesterday morning is our theory somehow has to move through those categories that get finally to the actual felt reality. And as the week goes along, that's really what we're doing. We're hoping by the end of the week you can picture yourself in your classroom as a person, as a teacher, teaching students and bringing their personal authority. Hence these three levels I keep pushing at you: theory, reality, and felt reality. And quite convinced that at least I found, you cannot live in a theoretical world forever. At some point, in fact, at most points, when you walk through that classroom door, you live in that felt reality that, of course, does grow out of theory, as far as that's concerned, but nevertheless is what you need to deal with personally day in and day out. What is the end result you want anyway? Well, scholars, psychologists, people who work with people say that the three things that people want, and I think they're basically correct on this one, respect. This is kind of a subset of authority, you might say. Respect. They want to have influence. Not proudly nor arrogantly, but we want to make a difference. And the third one is impact. So it's respect, influence, and impact. And in some ways, when we're talking about personal authority and developing that, what we're really after is those capacities, the capacities to be respected and understand. We're not being arrogant here. We're just talking about, we expect that. We want that. We want to be people who influence our students and others, and we want to be people of impact. And the point I've been trying to lay before you is there's space between the theory and the reality of respect, influence, impact, authority in the classroom. And so this morning, we start to get close, we zero in on that, start to talk. So what is it? What is it about a person? Think about the people you know in your church or the teachers you've had or whatever. And you when they walk into the situation, you just feel a presence appearing. All of a sudden, somebody is there who seems is going to make some sense of what's happening, who's going to actually pull some loose ends together, sort of sort out the important from the unimportant, and get at things. And you just know it's going to be okay somehow. What is it about those people anyway that actually gives them that kind of capacity? You know, as a youngster growing up on a dairy farm, that was my dad. You know, things could be flying apart at the seams. The parts and pieces and bolts breaking, and who knows what happens on the equipment. And when my dad showed up on the scene with a pair of pliers and a few other things, it was kind of like, well, he would, first of all, he'd look at the thing and he'd fuss and fume a little bit about us being a little more careful about the way we're doing things and so on. But he'd say, you know what, there's nothing to do but fix it. And so we'd start to fix it. If it was a little wire, or you know, he could do amazing things with a pair of pliers, let's say it that way. But my question is, what is it about this kind of people? That's what we want to explore here a little bit this morning. So, coming back to some verses that we had worked with yesterday, and I think very, very powerful verses, Philippians chapter 2, 5 to 11, worth actually just reading them again. Let this mind be in you. Think now, influencer, wanting respect, influence, impact. Let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus. Beyond dispute, the greatest influence, impact in our world has been Christ. Well, let this mind be in you, which was in him, who being in the form of God, thought it not robbery to be equal with God, but made himself of no reputation, and took upon him the form of a servant, and was made in the likeness of men, and being found in fashion as a man, he humbled himself and became obedient unto death, even the death of the cross. Wherefore God also hath highly exalted him and given him a name which is above every name, that at the name of Jesus every knee should bow, of things in heaven and things in earth and things under the earth, and that every tongue should confess that Jesus Christ is Lord, to the glory of God the Father. Very, very powerful passage. And I think it's the charter passage on the authority of Christ. There it is. It just lays it right out for us in a couple of verses. For this reason, he has been highly exalted. Of course, we are not Christ. And of course, our story is a little different. And yet we have been called to follow in his steps. And so I think that we can find some principle here applicable. I know I'm not going to be exalted in the way Christ was, but I hope to be exalted with him and join him in his cause. And it seems to me as if I am to stand in front of a classroom representing him, well, I may as well take on the same disciplines that he did. And I'm, of course, suggesting to you this morning that this is the foundational pathway toward developing personal authority. So let's examine this just a little bit. A couple of points here that I draw from this and just kind of generalize and put them together. So accept positions of authority, but hold them loosely. It probably goes without saying, but you know, those three things I gave to you, respect, influence, and impact, you can never demand them. If you demand them, you're on the wrong track right to begin with. I promise you it won't happen. Not only can you not demand them, but you must earn them. And in some ways here, I'm taking a little bit, just aiming at that a bit. You don't demand, you earn personal authority. And in my experience at least, that's quite the journey. And none of us really deserve to be recognized as having authority, so to speak. But on the other hand, anybody who has gotten there, the person I described a little earlier, has earned that position, that authority. So when it comes to position itself, principal of the school, director of the program, field director, teacher, name it, whatever the position may be, Accept them if given, don't demand them. Okay, personal authority has never come about by demanding it. Not only don't demand them, but if you do have them, hold them loosely. I'm just old enough now to realize there's about as much grace in stepping down from a position as there is in stepping into a position. And if it seems to me as if we could just learn how to hold it loosely. Maybe I was the principal. Maybe I was this. So what? Somebody else is now. Now I know you can tell I'm getting a little older here. That's why I'm talking in those ways. For those of you a little younger, you're wondering, well, how do you step into position? You do that graciously too. I already told you, you never demand it. You earn it. An earned position is way different than a demanded position, for sure. And here's the Jesus, who being in the form of God, thought it not robbery to be equal with God. That's a very, very interesting wording in the King James Version. Most other versions will say here that he did not cling to it. He did not demand it. He did not live out of that. In fact, I'm the Son of God, and therefore all of you listen up. But he did say, when asked, yes, I am the Son of God. Okay? So accept positions of authority, but hold them loosely. Much could be said about that. Serve rather than be served. But made himself of no reputation, even though he could have. In those moments when he was being, when the crowd was yelling, crucify him, the scripture itself says he could have called for legions of angels and have changed that situation instantly, but he did not. Now, that's way beyond anything that I'm ever going to face, and I suppose that you will face in terms of possibilities. But he made himself of no reputation. So wherever you find yourself in a school or any other organization, the question really is, am I positioned in a place where I can serve the best? And I have found for myself that I would just as well have the authority that helps me to serve in the capacities that I can serve the best in. There are some things I can do. But I don't do them because there are others who can do them better. What I want to ask myself is, well, what has God gifted you with? What is your capacities? What can I do? And I'm here to serve out of those gifts, giftings and capacities that God has given me. And I have found it to be helpful to actually entertain the question, so how can I best serve here in this situation, whatever it may be? He made himself of no reputation, and neither should we, but took upon him the form of a servant. Understand your limitations. I actually just spoke to that here in just a few moments ago. Understand your limitations. And being found in fashion as a man, he humbled himself. I don't try to hide this. I am not a gifted administrator. I have limitations there. My gifting is teaching. So I minimize my role as administrator as much as I can. You know, sometimes you have to do it whether you like it or not, whether it's in the church or wherever it is. And so don't hear me saying if you don't have a particular gifting, you should not do something. Sometimes you're called to anyway. Well, step up to the plate and do it. But understand your limitations. Know something about them. My wife is an organizer. She's not here this morning, so I can get by with saying a few things. So if we're packing up to go somewhere, I'd try as hard as I can. I just cannot remember everything that I need to remember. It irritates me. It irritates me when Sheila says, Did you remember your toothbrush? I'm like, and I'm too proud to say, no, I didn't. I'm like, I was getting to it. Just didn't get there yet. Well, it's good to understand your limitations, whatever they may be, and if you can even admit them, it actually increases your authority. It does not take away from it. It's the fool who's out here trying to do things he wasn't designed to do that ends up being people saying, maybe shake their head a little bit, walk away. So he found himself in fashion as a man, and he humbled himself, and that's what he functioned out of his manhood, his humanity. And we should as well. Fourth, learn the discipline of suffering. This is probably the toughest one, right here. Learn the discipline of suffering. Ladies and gentlemen, fellow teachers, brothers and sisters, I have learned that people who have respect and influence and impact have learned how to take it on the chin. And if you do not have that capacity, well, hey, God bless you with that capacity, because you'll need it in the classroom. It's oftentimes that you are misunderstood. And my experience and observation has been the more authority that is given to you, the greater the needed capacity to be able to absorb, to suffer. And I don't mean in a martyr sense, really. I just mean in the daily grind, the actual daily activities, the hard work, the blood, sweat, and tears that it takes to actually become an authority in any particular area, the misunderstandings that will come along with that. Some people are just not going to get it. They're not going to understand. If you've never been a church leader, you might not quite understand what I'm saying. But I can tell you, you can't be all things to all men, and you absolutely will now and then, not now and then, pretty regularly have to take it on the chin. Jesus did. Be under no illusions. If you're going to have respect, impact, and influence, you'll have to learn to suffer. Look, there are a lot of joys and a lot of blessings and great moments that I like to think on in my teaching career. There really are. I want to be clear with that. And I pray, God, that you'll have many of those. But mind you, you better learn this one. Okay, the capacity to actually take it on the chin, if I were to give it a term. Now, getting more specific here, like I said, we try to keep moving from theory to what actually happens here. Building personal authority, I borrowed this actually, adapted it, but I like to give credit where credit is due. I borrowed it from Stephen Covey in some of his work. He uses an example sort of like this in his business models, and I really like them. So if it sounds a little business-like, forgive me, but think through some of this, and I think it'll make some sense to you. So beginning at the outer layers, we're developing personal authority now. We want respect, we want to have influence, we want to have impact. Just at an organizational level. So on the left-hand side here, what you're seeing is the category. On the right-hand side is you're seeing the activity, or what really needs to happen here. So organizationally, to develop personal authority, work on alignment. Okay, what do we mean by that? Well, so you're a new teacher. You're not going to be teaching in your home community. You're going 1,000 miles, and you're going to teach there. In community A, where you are going to teach, there is going to be some kind of organization there. It may not be very sophisticated. It may be a little loose-ended. It may be something, but there will be something there. There is a culture there. There are expectations there. There are ways of doing things. There's probably, likely, a school board. There is an organization there. For you to have authority, align yourself. okay? Just be aligned. Some of my sons have taught in other communities, and if they're going away to teach, I get rather stern with them, and I say, well, listen, if you think you're going there to change that community, please stay home. Now, what about this influence and impact and respect that I'm talking about? Of course, I hope that my sons and all other teachers arrive at such a place by and by. But to go from community A to community B, and you have in mind, I'm going to be the changer here, careful. You'll be far better off to work on alignment, not just for 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years. Remember, you earn the right to speak. You never demand the right to speak. So alignment, developing personal authority, align. And again, much could be said here. We could work on that one a long time, but it's one that if you can't get past this one, you're already, there's a huge strike, almost three strikes against you. That one has to be in place. Almost want to go on a rabbit trail here, but it won't. Okay. Within the organizations, there is management. I bring this one up for two reasons, depending on which side of this you're on. And the key word here is empowerment. Okay, if you are a principal here today, you're managerial. Okay, so you fit into the organization as a manager. You're a person who's superintending. You're responsible for the things that are going on there in the school. And you have people under you. Wherever you're at in an organization, if you have people under you, it's your responsibility to empower them to do the job that you're asking them to do. Okay. Now, if you're on the other side, you're a teacher, you don't have people under you, but you're being asked to do something that you do not have the tools to do, well, then you have to do some talking and get the tools to do whatever it is that you're asked to do. Not a major point this morning, but it's kind of in this scheme of things. We're still not to the core of the issue here. I hear skill set on the left-hand side, and on the right-hand side is competence. I mentioned this one the other day, and I always talk about this and with some trepidation because, again, you're a young teacher, maybe a first-year teacher or whatever it is, and you already feel scared about your skill set, what you're actually bringing into the classroom. Hear me right. I'm not here on your case telling you you should not do that. That's not my point at all. All of us started somewhere. We started somewhere in our skill set. Our toolbox wasn't very full. Okay, maybe had very few things in there. I have deep respect for the person who steps into the classroom, called and given some direction by a community to actually teach in this, but they feel powerless. They feel like incompetent. I have no idea if I can even do this. Hear my respect. Please hear my respect. Then hear me next in saying that if you want to have personal authority in the classroom, you do have to develop the kind of skill sets that make you an outstanding teacher. You really do. I'm sorry to say that you didn't hear me say go to college. You didn't even hear me say go to Faith Builders. You did hear me say that you must develop the skill set that makes you a competent teacher in the classroom if you want to have authority there. And mind you, most people are reasonable about this, and they'll give plenty of space for this to happen. If they don't, they're insensitive and somebody needs to talk to them. Okay? So most communities that I know, most school boards I know, most ministers I know, most parents I know will give space. But they do want to see some development here. They do actually want to see Sally, Jim, or whoever come back next year a little better, a little more capable to actually do the job that they're asked to do. And clearly, the more skillful we become at it, the more authority, you might say, that we have in the area. Just a little side note here. I say to student teachers here, I always tell them, you should be a jack of all trades and a master of at least one. And what do I mean by that? Well, most of us have to teach all of the subjects in a classroom setting or whatever, and that's good. I actually think it's a good thing for that to happen. But I would encourage you, as you're developing, to actually become very skillful at least one area. Become a resource. So that we sit around sometimes and we have this problem, and we say, look, who's worked on this before? Well, somebody may be over there in Ohio or Iowa or, I don't know, Florida, wherever, that we happen to know that has actually worked with this type of student or whatever. And we say, well, why don't we ask them? Because we know that they have a certain level of competence there. And that gives them a certain level of authority. They have earned the right to speak in that area. So again, hear me right. You're a young teacher. You say, wow, I'm not even close there. Well, work. There's a way to get there. There really is. And I just want to encourage you, step by step, year by year, book after book, experience after experience, discussion after discussion, that builds your skill set and your competence level. And just do it. Step into the classroom and do it. Most of us at some time or another actually did that. And getting just a little closer here to the center, interpersonal, talking about relationships here now. And here the issue comes up on personal authority. I think that is probably the most important issue. It's the issue of trust. At the beginning of the day and at the end of the day, in the classroom, you can do everything right. But if you're not trusted, you're sunk. There's no authority in it. That has to be there. In fact, in relationships, period, it's the bedrock of good relationships is trust. If you don't trust somebody, just think of, well, maybe you should not, maybe I shouldn't push you to think of the person you don't trust. But I promise you, if you don't trust somebody, it will squelch the discussion. It'll push the conversation down. The weather will be a good subject, but there are a whole lot of other subjects that will be off the table because you don't trust them. So just think what it's like if you are teaching in such and such a community and the parents, for some reason or another, don't trust you. It's tough going. It is really tough going. You can hardly get anything right. But if they do trust you, it'll make a difference. And so Covey says, and I say too, that at the core of personal authority is personal trustworthiness or character. I already said we can't do all the how-tos here, but perhaps this at least gets us rolling here for a little more discussion along the way. So how do you develop personal trustworthiness, or what are the parts and the pieces that actually make that up? I have a few for you. So building trust. Number one is transparency of life. I did not teach with this teacher, but I was aware of a teacher that this lady's fellow teachers said, she leaves in the evening and she goes, we do not know where, and she comes back from we don't know where, and we don't know when she gets back. And she seems to have two lives. She teaches in the school, and then she has another life. That lady, again, due respect to her for having stepped out of her community, went into another community and taught. But wow, that was a mistake. because there was not transparency of life. There was question. I never heard anybody actually accuse her of, well, don't think so. But I do know that the parents just, what's that? What's that other life like? Listen, transparency of life, nothing hidden. Okay, I don't have a secret life going on. You could talk about the computers and the pornography and all the other stuff that goes along with it. For whatever it's worth, from an old man with gray hair, I wanted to say, get as far away from most of that stuff. I could name a few things. Let's see, the one starts with that, Facebook. And there's a couple of other ones. There's a whole lot of ways in which you kind of, but maybe that does increase transparency. Well, that's another subject. We're not going to go there right now. But transparency of life, there's an attitude that goes with that. And it's like some people, you have the sense they're not approachable. You couldn't talk to them about it. The next person you know, if you went and raised a pretty sensitive issue at the right place in the right time, they talked. They said, well, yeah, that is a problem, and so on. That's the way you want to be on this issue. Openness in communication is similar. Okay, I want to be very clear here and very understanding. Here's an 18-year-old gal. I'm not going to ask for the 18-year-olders to raise their hands here. She's going into community B, not her home community. She's going to teach there. She's scared to begin with. She's maybe fairly competent as far as that's concerned, a fine young lady. It's tough to talk. First of all, hear my understanding again. Secondly, just hear me say, though, that you do have to just open doors of communication. It's a little bit like this. You know, when I was a youngster growing up, and by the time I was an 18-year-old, I was sure that the generation before me just needed to be able to talk more about sexuality just more openly than what they were. They needed to be able to sit down with their sons and daughters and, talk about life. Well, what I didn't know is when I had my own sons, this was a little tougher than what I thought. And what I found is the only way to actually make this work is you have to open the doors of communication. Because I used to say to them, if there's any issue here, just why don't you come and talk to me? How many times do you think they came and talked to me? Now, if I went to them and asked them, how's it going? I found them ready to talk. Open the doors of communication is the point here. Okay? This really helps. Just feel what it's going to feel to like a parent. Here's parent A. He's at home, and Johnny's not doing so well or whatever. He hears nothing from school, and he's like, what? And Johnny doesn't want to go to school the next day. He hears nothing. And the next, this goes on. He knows something is wrong, but he's not hearing a thing. Look how much of a difference it makes if somebody just picks up the phone and calls us. Listen, I'm not quite sure what's going on, but Johnny's not doing so well, and I'm really not having a struggle with him, but can you help me understand him? Well, that goes miles with a parent. Open communication. A third, attitude of humility. Arrogance. Do I even need to talk about this one? I just be encouraged to be humble. And probably what that means more than anything else is to say it almost before almost every sentence, I may be wrong, but here's what I think. And could you help me to see something differently? just the openness that it's not that I'm always right. I could give an example or two there, but it won't. Record of dependability. Record of dependability. Please hear me again. Mr. Lehman, Brother Melvin Lehman, is as imperfect in the four that I have up here so far, and the rest I'm going to give as anybody in this room. We're not talking about perfection. We are talking about the pattern, the record. And so this person is dependable. I can depend on him. Maybe enough. Respect begets respect. B, building trust. If you want to be trusted, trust. In classroom management, I always begin with the assumption that my students will behave. I would suggest to you, do not start with the assumption that my students will not behave. There's actually a world of difference in the starting point there. So if the assumption is that they will behave, that's actually a respectful attitude towards somebody else. I expect this of you. That's respect. Respect begets respect. And the last one I have here, personal and private habits of life. Now, already number one was transparency of life. But let's not be fools. We have a private life too. I want to say that, as far as I know, my private life is open to question. I don't mind people talking to you about my private life. But I have. So last evening, I went home. What did I do? Well, it's part of my private life. You heard yesterday, I'm a farmer. So I went down, took care of my raspberries, and did a little digging around them and manured them a little bit and took care of my compost pile and a few things like that. That's a private life. And when I get up in the morning, what do? So personal, private habits of life. Very, very important thing here. And I offer here, too, the love-trust equation. A great verse in the Bible, love never fails. Now and then I've been in marriage counseling situations, and I often would say at the end or somewhere in it, I said, well, there's a great verse in the Bible, love never fails. I happen to believe it. And the truth of the matter is, maybe if something's not going well here, something's wrong with our capacity to love. Comment that I often make is, if a student knows that you are on his or her side, you love them. You can make mistakes, and he or she will forgive you every time. But if they suspect that you do not love them, you don't have to make many mistakes. And they'll have your hide. So, love. Now, love and trust. I have an arrow and a bridge. Love crosses the bridge toward trust. Trust reciprocates and actually creates a greater capacity to love. This is the reason that in a relationship, say between Sheila and me, a husband and wife relationship, well, look, if you kick out that the right-hand side there, if you kick trust out, you can demand love all you want to. There are limitations on it. This is why broken relationships are really tough to mend. Because trust is so intertwined with love. And hence, I just offer this to you. Remember that part of the equation of loving people is this question of trust. If they can trust you, it increases their capacity. Not my subject this morning, but it's something I've tangled with in my heart and mind in the last number of years is the capacity to love. What would you do with a generation who has lost its capacity to love? This is worth some thought sometime at a different place, but write it down and think about it. Because, I grew up hearing love, 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 love. But what if you've lost your capacity? What if somehow the internal dynamics have reduced the capacity to love? Well, just like if trust is not in the equation, it will. Here's a little example I give wherever I go in the country, crossing the bridge. So remember my last point there just a few minutes ago was that in your private life, what about your habits of life? Trust is associated with this. Think Daniel. Think open windows. Think lion's den. Think that great story, one of the great stories told around the world. They tell me that even in Hindu and Muslim countries and communist countries and so forth and so on, over the years, two great stories, two of the most outstanding stories were David and Goliath and Daniel in the lion's den. Do you know that story of Daniel in the lion's den would not even be in the Bible? I doubt you'd ever heard of it except for a man had a habit. He had a habit. and that habit was so strong, he just would open those windows and he would kneel down and pray three times a day. I suppose some of those might have been rote prayers. I don't know. Maybe even read some. I have no idea what he doesn't say, but that was a habit that he had. And that habit got him into a heap of trouble, but made one of the greatest stories in the world is just that habit. And so I point out to you that habits, the actual things that you do day in and day out, really do make a difference. So speaking of computers, a habit I have that I just recently, within the last 2 years or so, decided I would do is when I open my computer in the morning, if I haven't opened my Bible before, or if I have, either way, the first thing I have a Bible program on my computer. First thing I'm going to do, that's the first thing that's getting opened. It's always getting opened that way. Always. It's a habit that I've tried to work into my life. Did I say you should have that one? I don't know if you should or not. But habits form you, and habits begin to describe you. Howard, he talked just a little bit about some long distance running that some of us have done over the years. Well, they're just our habits. There are habits of taking care of your body. There are habits of taking care of your soul. There are habits of taking care of your spirit. There are habits that feed you and feed your personal authority. And I want to encourage you on it. On the right, left-hand side of the bridge, here's the problem for most people. It's not their ideals. Almost guaranteed. 100% of you in this room, if I had you list your ideals for life, all of us would say, hurrah, three cheers. You're right on it. Great ideals. In fact, it's always amazed me that even pagan people have great ideals. They really do. I was involved in a prison ministry back in Chambersburg for about 16 years, and I was astounded. I never heard a dad ever say, you know what? I set out to raise my son to be an alcoholic. If you asked them, what do you want for your son? And when they listed the three or four things that they wanted for their son, they were good. They were great ideals. But ladies and gentlemen, the problem is the bridge, because on the other side of the bridge are the habits of life that actually bring to reality the ideals of our hearts. I promise you, find me a person who has crossed that bridge and they will be a person of authority. I don't mean a positional authority, but when they speak, it will count. Because there are so few who get across there. Am I raising my hand to say I got across there? Listen, I've got issues there too. But I do know one thing, on the few moments that I actually have been able to say, listen, Melvin, if that's what you want, then these are the habits that you're going to have to practice. If you want to run 13 miles, there are some habits that must be in place or you will never run a full 13 miles, period. That's just the way it is. Now, running 13 miles is not halfway as important as a whole pile of other things that I hope to have in my list, that I do have in my list of ideals. May I encourage you, connect habits of life with ideals, and you will become a person of authority. At least you'll be well on the way. It's a good thing. The bridge, ladies and gentlemen, is the problem, even in the Christian community. The bridge from ideals to actually what we do day to day. And I close with some very, very simple instructions, not from me, but from the Lord. But be ye doers of the word and not hearers only, deceiving your own selves. James. Personal authority, do. Do, don't just hear, do. Follows along with the bridge that I just got done mentioning to you. Be ye doers of the word and not hearers only. By the way, a very, very interesting thing. If you say something long enough, you almost think that you're doing it when you're not. See how it says here, deceiving your own selves. If you're a hearer and not a doer, after a while you think you're doing when you're not doing. That's really the deception that's in it. And finally, humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you in due time. Casting all your care upon him, for he careth for you. You cannot demand respect, influence, and impact. There is a path. Humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God. God bless you.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.